We need gavel control.
It's good to keep Alan on his toes.
Too much coffee. House Finance come to order with that orderly gaveling. It's 6:06 p.m. on the 9th of April, 2014. We have members present, Representative Guerra Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Bryce Edgman, and Representative Thompson, and Representative Munoz. We have a quorum to do business. We're not in receipt of the gas line bill, which we didn't have, although I understand will be read across tonight. And Senate Bill 191 was asked to be taken off for consideration. The sponsors are busy in the Senate proceedings, so we just have the royalty approve the Tesoro royalty oil sale, and then some ancillary suggestions from the Interior delegation on that side of the room. So I'd like to invite the sponsor of this legislation is the Parnell Administration, the Rules Committee, by request of the governor. Welcome, Commissioner Balash. I was hoping to take that designee off you in 2 days, but I guess it's been extended just to keep you on your toes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was hoping to take that off, too, and I've got another week of mine in my P's and Q's.
I think you have another, like, 4 or 5 years.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Joe Balash, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Natural Resources, and House Bill 287 is a governor's bill to approve the sale of royalty oil to Tesoro, one of our in-state refineries. And we've covered the measure previously in the first committee hearing on this topic, but do want to take the opportunity to speak to an amendment that I hope will be offered here this evening.
It has been proposed as amendment number one by Representatives Thompson and T. Wilson.
Would you like us to move amendment one?
No, we'll get to that point.
Okay. I was trying not to jump the gun. Sorry, okay. Sir.
Let's just discuss it for now and lay out what it is.
But this particular sales contract to one of our six in-state refineries is something that highlights the value that these particular facilities provide to the state, to our economy.
And Commissioner Balash, we'll go for, are these available for the public out there as well? Okay, they have been circulated. Thank you. And they are available at the LIOs as well. Okay. Sorry, we had a little housekeeping matter.
No problem.
Please proceed.
So what I wanted to speak to this evening is the state of our refinery business. It's incredibly important that we have a healthy in-state refining industry for a lot of different reasons, not least of which is the fact that we need to make sure Alaskans enjoy energy security of our own here at home. We do have six refining operations here in the state, six facilities. Four of those make products for consumer markets, and they provide more than 900 jobs in Valdez, North Pole, Nikiski, and in other communities that support their distribution operations. Keeping these refineries open is good business for Alaska, and unfortunately, it appears we're going to lose one. Having these refineries operate in Alaska is good not only for our business, but also for our national security. Having a ready source of jet fuel is critical to our military strategic infrastructure for our forces at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, Fort Wainwright, Eielson Air Force Base, and the U.S. Coast Guard Base in Kodiak. If we want to have a shot at basing the F-35s here in Alaska, we need to have a secure source of jet fuel for those fighters, and we must maintain this industry. But unfortunately, as I said, this industry is not healthy today. Due to a variety and combination of factors, we're presently seeing severe diminishment of the margins for these refineries that operate, and and it's a big, big problem. The biggest problem we have is in the jet fuel market. Ted Stevens International operates as one of the busiest air cargo hubs in the North American continent. And that business opportunity creates a large base of demand that our refineries are able to refine product and supply, and provides additional scale for all of those operations that make the manufacture of gasoline, diesel, home heating fuel, marine fuels that much more cost-effective and efficient. Without that air cargo business, the margins, the costs for those refinery products that we use as Alaskans in our homes, in our businesses, in our vehicles, will be more expensive. There's no doubt about it. So the biggest challenge our refineries are facing in competing for that jet fuel market, however, is the pricing for crude. The feedstock into our refineries is priced on a basis that is tied to the ANS West Coast deliveries. And in the last 10 years, we've seen a dramatic change in that particular pricing structure. 10 years ago, ANS was priced at a $2 discount to West Texas Intermediate. But there was a change that occurred a few years ago, one that took some folks by surprise and has benefited us at the Treasury, certainly. But ANS today trades at roughly a $10 premium to West Texas International. And so we've got this bizarre phenomenon going on in the marketplace that's driven in many ways by what's going on in the mid-continent U.S. for the production of light sweet crude in the Bakken and other shale-type formations. And in the long run, the expectation is that will normalize, that infrastructure will shift and things will even out, and there will ultimately be a narrowing of that ANS price to the other forms of crude that are out there. But this, in the meanwhile, this cost disadvantage is severely impinging our refinery's ability to compete for that jet fuel market. So since that pricing change occurred, and since we've seen a couple of other things occur, namely with regard to federal decisions and federal actions on pipeline tariff matters as well as quality bank decisions, we've heard certainly from the interior refineries in North Pole in particular about the challenges that they face. And going back to 2012, we've been engaged in a series of conversations with the owners of each of those operations. And with regard to Flint Hills, we negotiated a new contract for the sale of our royalty to Flint Hills that this body approved last year, and one that made a pretty significant move on price for those sales. In addition, we've had a conversation running with PetroStar, which does not buy royalty oil, but is similarly affected by the quality bank issues and other cost pressures that are not just pinching margins, but eliminating them. And I'll allow the representatives from PetroStar to come forward and speak to their specific circumstances and concerns. But really, you know, this conversation has been ongoing, and it's one that you know, we had hoped would correct itself through normal market forces in the pricing of this crude oil. But with the announcement of Flint Hills back in February that they were closing the North Pole facility, everything changed. We found a much brighter light shining on this point and concern. And since that time, Governor Parnell has had a subset of his cabinet meeting regularly on these matters to look at the issues surrounding not only Flint Hills, but what's going on with the rest of these operations. And one thing in particular that got my attention was the realization that the small pipeline between TAPS and the refineries in North Pole that's owned by GVEA was going to
What's that acronym?
I'm sorry, Golden Valley Electric Association.
And I am familiar with the interior, but this is for the public.
Sure. There's a pair of pipelines going to and from TAPS that connect the crude in TAPS to those two refineries in North Pole. And the revenue requirement on that set of pipelines was $4.5 million in 2013. The bill for that was split 85% to 15% between Flint Hills and PetroStar. And the consequence then of Flint Hills going away, potentially or likely, was that the full freight on that pipe or set of pipes was going to be borne solely by PetroStar. And to have their costs increase nearly sixfold, certainly with what we had been made aware of with regard to their very thin margins already, gave me a concern, one that caused us to reach out specifically to PetroStar and ask, oh my gosh, you guys aren't going to be the next ones to close, are you? And, the response we got back was, well, not immediately, but if something doesn't change, that's a very real possibility. So we had to sit down and consider a number of things, and certainly one option that we considered and considered strongly was to sell our royalty at a discount, to move off of the ANS West Coast pricing terms and mirror something more like WTI. And, we thought about doing that for select sales. But after considering those options, reviewing them with the Department of Law, we were convinced that federal U.S. constitutional questions around the Interstate Commerce Act, the Equal Protection Act, or clauses rather, could actually cause us to have to sell or value all of our royalty at that discounted price. And at, 85,000 barrels a day of production today, the price tag associated with such a move could be measured in, the 100, 200 plus million dollars, and something that we were not prepared to entertain or consider. So that said, the consequences of additional refineries closing and the potential knock-on effect and consequence with regard to basing decisions by the Department of Defense, not only with hopefully the F-35, but ultimately the continued viability of Eielson Air Force Base, my former home, by the way, was something that certainly got a lot of attention inside the cabinet and with the governor. So
let me help you out on your confirmation. He's from Eielson High School, three-time state wrestling champion. Pretty impressive. A little bit out of fighting weight, though.
Just a little, yeah.
Please proceed. Please proceed as best you can.
So aside from those valuation issues, it also raised the specter of picking winners and losers. We only have so much royalty to go around, and production would need to come from some of the private producers as well. So in light of all that, we sat down to craft a package of provisions that would give us a defined value that would not be fungible, that we could provide for a finite period of time and offer incentives to make additional investments in the facilities that would make them more efficient and therefore more profitable and able to compete more effectively for the jet fuel market, as well as the manufacture of all the other products that we do use here in Alaska. And so that package, I'll give you the highlights before we get into the details. That package included, first, a royalty valuation provision that is similar to what we do for the sale of Cook Inlet natural gas to utilities. Two, an investment incentive for capital investments in the refinery infrastructure. And three, a credit that is modeled in part on the small producer credit we have for the oil and gas production tax system. And the two tax provisions are ones that we would make available for the next 5 years, but definitely have an end point on them and some specific limitations on them to ensure that we're providing a value that can be used to ensure that these refineries stay operating here in Alaska and provide the kind of economic benefits, jobs, and energy security that a nation as rich, or I'm sorry, a state as rich in resources as ours will continue to enjoy. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions or stand by.
I think what we do, just so there's on the public record what we're really talking about now, it'd probably be a good time for you to move the amendment. We won't act upon it today, but to put it out in the domain so it's something that's being actively considered. And as you move it, if in a tandem you'd like to just briefly discuss the content and the intent. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move amendment number one.
Object.
Okay. And do you want to go first, Ms. Representative?
Right ahead. You're spun up on this pretty good.
I'm spun up on something. Okay. And I think the commissioner described most of the provisions. I'll leave the first provision, section one, for him to do on the royalty portion of it. But section two is a $15 million tax credit for any refinery in the state that is selling to a third party. So this would not include those up on the North Slope. They produce their own. They use their own. If they were not able to take the whole $15 million in a tax credit, they could get it in cash, and we do have a fund that some of that could come out of a tax and an oil and gas credit fund that currently has $90 million in it. The second section, which would be actually section number three, is a tax credit. Originally it was $100 million, and they would have 10% they would be able to do, which would be $10 million off. Since this whole provision has a maximum of $20 million, Representative Thompson and I spoke, and we said, well, there's no real reason to have it at $100 million, so let's decrease it down to $50 million. Nobody would take any more than $5 million. And it's my understanding on this portion of it as well that it would not include the North Slope refineries unless at some time they decide they wanted to sell it to a third party and come down the Dalton Highway, however they would do that. I can take a stab at section number one. My understanding is what it does, so I'm going to see if I actually learned a lesson, is that if BP or one of Conoco wanted to sell so much, let's say they wanted to sell 8,000 barrels and they wanted to sell it cheaper, everybody down the line would get it, but it would have to be the whole 8,000 barrels. It couldn't just be part of the barrels to be able to get that discount. And so that provision in there is because sometimes they have, my understanding, extra barrels of oil that they might want to sell that way versus in another marketplace, and they would have that opportunity to be able to do that. And I'm just going to, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, to make sure that I am correct in what I said through the commissioner. Representative Thompson might be able to correct anything as well.
Again, as Representative Wilson mentioned, the actual royalty contract, that's inalterable by the legislative branch. That provision is an up or down. It's actually kind of unusual when they're adding ancillary language to a royalty contract. They've usually been pretty inviolate as a legislative vehicle. So this is kind of a departure. I can't recall another time where a royalty contract had a substantive amendment, not on the actual contract, but on the legislation. Is that historically accurate?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Historically, the royalty contracts have been approved as standalone measures, but the state constitution does allow for a measure to include multiple features as long as they're all on the same subject.
Oh, I understand.
And so I was
talking about the gravity of the direction we're heading on this. It's out of urgency, I suspect.
Absolutely, a sense of urgency and a need to take action so that we can stabilize not only the industry but give confidence to those who may be making decisions in Washington, D.C. about where to locate certain.
I also wanted to let my very good friend Doug Isaacson know that this wasn't open for a royalty discussion.
Mr. Chairman, can I add one thing I forgot?
Yes, Representative Wilson.
I also want to make sure that everyone knows it also has a 5-year sunset on this. So although we have great legislation that would come forward, it would have been up for a review, but this actually does have a 5-year sunset. And I did ask the question, what would change between now and 5 years? And the answer I was given is, first of all, they'd be able to do some upgrades, more efficiencies. And I think the biggest part, as the commissioner shared, is that we are upside down right now with the West Texas or with the way it's down there and ANS. And hopefully we'll even out, and maybe they'll run out of oil down in North Dakota and they'll want ours more. But there are some weird dynamics that are going on that hopefully within that 5 years will settle out and they won't any longer need this money.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to get it on the record. I had a little bit of a question that I circled here. Commissioner, on Section 3, page 5, line 19. I just wanted to make sure. Pardon? On the amendment.
Okay.
Means an expenditure directly attributed to the in-state purchase, and I just wanted to get that clarified. That would that mean the in-state purchase of Flint Hills Refinery, or is this for upgrades and purchase of equipment to be more efficient?
And is Flint Hills the subject of one of these loans, or is that speculative?
No, that refinery is the one that's closing, and
okay,
it's going
you
to
mentioned the, for the Flint Hills.
Pardon?
You mentioned Flint Hills. I just want I made.
Oh, I did say Flint Hills. If somebody wanted to purchase that refinery, does that purchase word there include the possible credit?
I'll listen more carefully too. I'm sorry.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson. No, we're not talking about purchasing refineries or repurchasing refineries. This is in reference to the tangible personal property that you see on line 20.
I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you, Commissioner.
Well, we have one of the we have a couple of the entities here tonight. Folks, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. I have a question for the Commissioner. Thank you. What's the refinery capacity for the producers on the North Slope now?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think the largest is 15,000 barrels per day. And the other one is 10,500 by my information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is even at an aggregate number, the ability to move production on the North Slope away from themselves and then sell it back to themselves from a separate entity to qualify for this. How do you see that not happening through here?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think two things to keep in mind. We've got a two-part test here. One is the volumetric limitation, which they would have to make a significant change in their capacity to be able to qualify. The second is the manner in which they do their business. And again, it's this question of whether or not they sell primarily to third parties at arm's length, in arm's length transactions. And I would bring your attention to page 3, line 3. Their primary function is the manufacturing and sale of products to third parties in arm's length transactions. So an arrangement where they sell to a third party who then turns around and sells back to them is not arm's length.
Or where they lease the facility and somebody runs it and sells it back to them, would that be included in that?
That would be a creative way to come at it, one that would be noticed very quickly, and I think there'd be a practical consequence and limitation on that kind of practice.
Okay. So if that was the case, would you notice by them applying for this tax credit?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Osterman? Yeah, we got you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. first off, Commissioner, was this written by the administration and then provided by legislature?
Mr. Co-Chair, we did draft an amendment that then in turn was put through Ledge Legal.
the numbers on the credits. The $15 million, for example, how was that arrived at, and then the $5 million on the other section?
Mr. Co-Chair, that was arrived at sort of from a backing in process. As we examined the price differential that would be required to achieve something close to a WTI type of pricing, we looked at that number and saw that from a royalty perspective. How would you calculate that value and shifted then from a royalty number to a defined tax credit? And so we've kind of backed our way into it.
All right. Mr. Chairman, is it in on line or page 3, line 20-21? Also, it's referred to the next section of the if they don't have enough, or if they have more tax credits than they have taxes, that they can carry the money forward for one thing for 5 years, so they carry the credit forward for 5 years. And if I read D correctly, at the end of the 5 years, if they accumulate X amount of dollars that they were not able to use as a tax credit, the state then would pay them that amount of money.
Mr. Co-Chair, these credits are intended to be refundable. Yes. So if the corporate income tax liability of the refinery was not as large as the tax credit here, then that's something that would be able to take to the Department of Revenue for a tax refund like our other oil and gas production tax credits.
Is this similar to how we do our current credits with the oil industry?
Mr. Co-Chair, there are certain tax credits in the production tax system that are eligible for refund, yes.
Is this credit limited by the number of refineries? I mean, I think we have 3, if I understand correctly, that fall under this bill currently or this amendment. And are those the only 3? Are there others out there that could come up to speed and become qualified, for example, if they use the infrastructure expenditure credit to build up the refinery to do this?
Mr. Co-Chair, we do not believe that is likely nor feasible. We technically today have 4 refineries that would qualify, including the Flint Hills facility in North Pole. But because this won't be available until January 1 of 2015, unfortunately, our expectation is that there will only be 3 facilities that qualify.
That's all I have right now, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
President Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have misheard. Did somebody say that there was a cap on this total for what, a $50 million cap total somewhere? Because I don't see that in the bill. Or maybe I misheard that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Guerra, there's a cap that appears on page 3, line 18. That is a total for any 1 year of $20 million. So the investment incentive credit is capped at $5 million per the amendment, and the refinery credit is $15 million, so for a total of 20.
For the chair.
Same here.
Thank you. So it's a potential with the three refineries we have right now, $60 million a year for 5 years. Is that
through the chair, Representative Guerra? That's correct.
And then through the chair, I didn't understand. I didn't follow Representative Osterman's question. On page 3, line 14, it says this can't reduce a taxpayer's tax liability below zero, but you seem to indicate that if the tax liability was below zero, they could somehow still get the credit. So did I must have misunderstood that.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, you would not have a liability that is a negative number. Your number could go no lower than zero. But if you have unused credit available, that unused credit could then be refunded. In other words, if you start off with a tax liability of $2 million, and you've earned the $5 million investment incentive credit, you would have to first apply that $5 million against your $2 million liability. The remaining three could be refunded, but not used to take your tax liability below zero. I know you're looking at me funny.
Sounds like it's below zero, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, it is.
Not on the books. If I understand correctly, you can't get your tax liability below zero on the books, but they can then carry that forward to the next year. And if you still are that way, they can carry it forward again until they get to the end, or they can ask for retirement. Oh, yeah, again, they can. Then they can ask for a refund of all that money they've been carrying forward. But they can't go below zero with.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if the commissioner can clarify. Co-Chairman Osterman read it that you have to keep carrying it forward for 5 years before you can get it refunded. Now, can't you get it refunded in any given year in cash?
You can, but you can carry it
forward. Oh, you could choose, yeah, that you could choose to do either as the taxpayer.
Don't bother me here.
Sorry.
Did you, on the record, Mr. Balash, can you clarify that point?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The taxpayer, I guess, could carry it forward, but probably wouldn't. They would be able to get the refund in the year of tax question. So for each year individually.
Page 3, line 14.
Mr. Chair, can
Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It kind of follows up on Representative Guerra's. On the $5 million that we're talking, I want to remind people that it's going to be $50 million of investment that has to be done to the refinery to receive that. So if my numbers are correct, at the end of 5 years, based on just the three current refineries we have to receive that $75 million, they would have had to invest $750 million in 5 years. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
And I have one other question. And I know we have revenue on the line. I don't know whether revenue or Mr. Balash. Could you just briefly, on the oil and gas tax credit fund, could you just tell us how much is in there and what that fund is for?
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the oil and gas tax credit refund fund was established in 2007, and the policy choice that was made then was to move away from transferable credits, which had the effect of putting somebody who had earned a tax credit in the position of having to sell that tax credit at some discount. Because the impact of the Treasury is the same, and the desire was to see the full value of that credit earned realized by the party incurring the loss or investment, making the investment to earn the credit, to make sure that they fully realize the value, the legislature put together this particular fund as a place for eligible parties to take their credits and seek a direct payment rather than finding somebody else who has a tax liability to take it off their hands at a discount.
And follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
And how does that money get in there? I mean...
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that fund must be capitalized by the legislature as part of the appropriations process. And so I believe there is historically been funds deposited there, and I'm not certain of the current balance, but am certain it is currently in use and operation by the Department of Revenue.
Okay, because it was my understanding, Mr. Chair, I know there's $90 million in there, Commissioner Rodell did that, but it was also my understanding, though, that so much money off each barrel of royalty oil goes into that fund to be utilized for this. So it's not just general fund money going in, but we do also capitalize it as barrels go down.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, Commissioner Rodell would know the specific mechanics of that better than I.
I just want to make sure that it's not all general fund money. We do actually put money in there for these types of credits.
We're going to hold the rest of the questions here. I've got two presenters here, and we have a 7:30 floor session. So we will come back to both Commissioners Balash and Rodell, and like to invite, I'd like to excuse you and invite the presenters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First of the two. We will come back, and we'll have more robust discussion on the welcome.
Okay. Good evening, Co-Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, and distinguished members of the committee. I am Tara Sweeney, Senior Vice President of External Affairs for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Co-presenting with me this evening is Doug Chapados, President and CEO of PetroStar Incorporated. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. By way of background, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation was established pursuant to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Our corporate headquarters are located in Barrow, and we have administrative and subsidiary offices across the state. We are owned by approximately 11,000 Inupiat shareholders, many of whom live in the villages of Point Hope, Point Lay, Wainwright, Atkasuk, Barrow, Nuaqsit, Qaqtoqlik, and Anaktuvuk Pass. From very humble beginnings, ASRC has grown to become the largest locally owned and operated business in Alaska. We have five diverse lines of business, including the only Alaska-owned refining and fuel marketing operation in the state, known as PetroStar. We have approximately 10,000 employees nationwide, and our family of companies has nearly half of our employees here in Alaska, in Barrow, Fairbanks, Kenai, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, Valdez, and across the North Slope oil fields. The remainder of our employees work in the lower 48. Our presentation today, okay, thank you. Our presentation today will focus on the current shape of in-state refining in Alaska and why we support the governor's proposal to stabilize the refining industry. The recent announcement that Flint Hills Resources is shutting down its refinery in June has sent shockwaves throughout the state. But Flint Hills' economic problems are not unique. Alaska refineries are dependent upon drawing ANS crude from the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and they're fighting to remain in business. Leadership from this committee and the legislature is needed to help this vital industry to ensure that petroleum products Alaskans need are refined here in Alaska from Alaska crude. This slide here indicates that ASRC is committed to Alaska. By the nature of our ownership, we intend to be in Alaska for the long term. As you can see, we have a presence across the state in employing all facets of Alaskan society, from engineers to equipment operators, payroll technicians to attorneys, the five North Slope crafts to lending officials. In 2013 alone, we invested over $36 million in Alaska infrastructure projects, provided over $2 million in charitable contributions, and over $380 million in wages to Alaskans. These numbers are real, they're tangible, and meaningful to the people the legislature is assembled to represent. ASRC was one of the original investors in PetroStar, and ASRC's support has been crucial to making PetroStar a viable refiner in Alaska. Since 2007, ASRC has reinvested over $280 million in PetroStar's operations. This includes the ASRC Board of Directors' 2008 decision to invest over $150 million. To build the facilities necessary for the PetroStar Valdez refinery to produce the EPA-mandated ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel. This was and remains the single largest investment in ASRC's history and established PetroStar as one of only two in-state refiners capable of producing that essential fuel. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Doug Chapados.
Thank you, Tara. Good evening, Co-Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Chapados. I'm President and CEO of PetroStar. PetroStar, as Tara noted, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. This slide provides some additional information for the committee on our company. PetroStar is the only locally owned refiner in the state of Alaska and operates two refineries, one located in North Pole and the other in Valdez. We have one of two refineries in the state that provide ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel to the Alaskan market, and we also produce and supply jet fuel, marine diesel, and home heating oil. PetroStar's North Pole and Valdez refineries were commissioned in 1985 and 1993, respectively, and have a combined crude processing capacity of 82,000 barrels per day, nearly equal to the capacity Flint Hills is now proposing to shut down. Refined products from PetroStar's refineries can be found in consumer fuel tanks and equipment across the state, and in addition to refining, much of PetroStar's production is sold through company-owned marine terminals, heating oil distributorships located in Valdez, Kodiak, Unalaska, and the interior. Currently, 100%, and for many years, 100% of the Alaska Marine jet fuel demand, military jet fuel demand at J-Bear, Eielson Air Force Base, Fort Wainwright, and Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak is produced and delivered by PetroStar. In 2013 alone, PetroStar worked with 750 in-state vendors, generated 282 million gallons in fuel sales, and provided products and services to over 14,000 customers. PetroStar thus plays an important role throughout Alaska, and especially within the communities in which it does business. Our two refineries, first, the Valdez refinery, can process up to 60,000 barrels a day of crude. In addition to the crude distillation unit, it also has a distillate hydrotreater and associated process units and can manufacture 12,000 barrels a day of ultra-low sulfur diesel. That's approximately half the demand for the state of Alaska. The refinery itself can produce or has the capability of producing 270 million gallons annually, and its primary products are commercial and military-grade jet fuels and ultra-low sulfur diesel. It is, we believe, the only refinery that simultaneously produces both Arctic grade number one and number two marine highway diesel fuels. Our North Pole refinery is significantly smaller, and it is directly adjacent to the Flint Hills refinery in North Pole. It can process 22,000 barrels per day. It has a 95 million gallon per year annual capacity of product. Its primary products are, again, commercial and military-grade jet fuels, home heating oil for the local interior market, and low-sulfur diesel fuel. North Pole also serves as the bulk distribution point for PetroStar for ultra-low-sulfur diesel sales that are within the Fairbanks area and also for volumes destined for the North Slope and other communities. Our contribution to this This slide represents the contribution PetroStar has made to the Alaska economy in 2013. While the numbers are aggregated to include our Anchorage operations, you can see the breakdown by community in the interior, Valdez, Kodiak, and Unalaska. An important takeaway from this slide is that PetroStar alone has invested nearly $300 million in capital projects in the state over the last 7 years. And further, provides employment to 304 employees within Alaska. 151 of those are located in the Fairbanks and North Pole areas, 66 in Valdez, most of those engaged in the refinery operation, 25 in Kodiak operating a marine terminal and fuel distribution point, 25 in Unalaska across three marine terminals down there. PetroStar paid salaries and wages of $28 million in 2013, including $10.5 million in the Fairbanks North Pole area, $7.8 million in Valdez, $1.5 million in Kodiak, and $1.8 million in Unalaska. And finally, it produced 270 million gallons of refined products, 65 million gallons at our North Pole refinery, 205 million gallons at the Valdez refinery. And again, it supplies 100% of Alaska's military jet fuel demand for J-Bear, Eielson, Fort Wainwright, and the Coast Guard Air Station in Kodiak. And I should add, too, it also supplies 100% of the U.S. Coast Guard demand for marine gas oil or diesel fuel in Kodiak and in Alaska. I should point out, too, that the refineries that we control have the total capacity of producing over 360 million gallons a year. We only produce 270, so if we are in business and able to do so, we have significant reserve capacity to meet demand that will not be met in the future given the Flint Hills closure. Some other statistics, we engaged with 750 in-state vendors, 250 of those in the interior, 100 in the Valdez area, and 70 in Kodiak. Again, the total sales for the company, which includes products that we buy and then resell from other refineries, interior gallons were 82 million gallons, 40 million for Valdez, 15 for the Kodiak Island, and 30 million for Unalaska. And then 14,100 customers statewide, including 8,000 in the interior, most of those being heating oil customers, 1,100 in Valdez, again, heating oil customers being the largest number of those. Majority of the 4,000 Kodiak customers are also heating oil customers, but we also sell a significant volume of marine diesel to the fishing fleet down there. And then the 200-plus customers in Unalaska are almost exclusively fishing boats and other processing ships engaged in the fishing industry down there. Other significant Kodiak facts. PetroStar supplies approximately 50% of Kodiak's diesel, heating oil, and gasoline demand. We provide 100% of the fuel requirements for the Kodiak Electric Association, the City of Kodiak, and Kodiak Island Borough and School District. PetroStar finally is the only supplier of propane on Kodiak Island as well. It is critical for the committee to understand that the challenges facing the in-state refining industry are not new. As Tara mentioned, 2 years ago, PetroStar and Arctic Slope engaged the state of Alaska, highlighting warning signs and of a weak refining industry within the state, and had discussions regarding the solutions that could resolve those issues. In short, there are two major challenges facing in-state refining. The first is the very high cost of ANS crude oil. ANS crude is one of the most expensive crude oils in the United States, despite being of lower quality than lighter, sweeter crude oils from fields such as the Bakken in North Dakota, which currently sells at a very large discount compared to ANS. Several key takeaways are that the failure of any remaining in-state refineries would decrease competition within Alaska's fuel markets and remove most of the existing brakes on prices. Failure of the interior refineries would eliminate any local source of military jet fuel supply for Eielson Air Force Base and of commercial jet fuel for the Fairbanks International Airport. And I can tell you that the former point is especially critical. Shortly after the Flint Hills announcements of closure, our North Pole refinery was visited by two uniformed representatives of the Defense Logistics Agency. Their first question for us was, what does Flint Hills closure mean for PetroStar? They know that we are similarly positioned to Flint Hills, and what they were checking to see is, what is our status? What is our future ability to supply product for Eielson, not just for the existing aggressor squadron that's stationed there, but also that's going to be a factor that weighs into the decision whether or not F-35s will be ultimately based at Eielson. The second major challenge is the quality bank methodology, which is unique to refiners that draw crude oil and return oil to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The TAPS quality bank is regulated principally by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, and to a lesser extent by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. In 2002, when the quality bank was being litigated in a months-long proceeding, the FERC ultimately settled on a quality bank methodology that made the TAPS refiners pay shippers more than any party requested at the hearing, and the RCA ultimately concurred. This led directly to the excessive quality bank penalties that are imposed on TAPS refiners today. To give you some scope of what that significance of quality bank is for PetroStar, we have paid over $525 million in penalties over the last 9 years, and nearly half of that amount in the last 3 years alone. In short, the quality bank is getting worse. At the same time, market conditions are getting worse for Alaskan refiners, and its effects are devastating. Over the past 3 years, most of the margin between PetroStar's crude oil price and the price it receives for its refined products like commercial jet fuel was paid out in quality bank penalties. Faced with the combination of exorbitant quality bank fees and high crude costs, PetroStar and ESRC have had to put on hold capital projects that would grow PetroStar's business in Alaska and benefit consumers statewide just when these are needed most. I'm very glad that the Commissioner Balash was here earlier to describe this in more detail. This is intended to give you the perspective from a from the refinery point of view in terms of what these three components of the governor's proposal represent for us. The royalty oil benefit, we see that as an expansion of the potential pool of suppliers for ANS crude oil to our refineries. As the volumes of oil traveling through the Trans-Alaska pipelines have diminished, it is getting more and more difficult to source crude oil for sale to in-state refiners. We expect to be interested in talking to the state about perhaps purchasing royalty oil in the future, but this is another method to get oil to in-state refiners, specifically through in-state producers. the in-state refinery tax credit. This provision is equitable in our view because it is done on a per-refinery basis. It aims to mitigate the high cost of ANS crude oil, and it addresses the fact that not all refiners are purchasing royalty oil from the state right now.
We can declassify this right now. It's not confidential anymore, right?
Yes.
You better stop now.
Mr. Chairman, apologies.
Please proceed.
Just us and whoever's watching.
Yeah.
And then finally, the qualified in-state refinery infrastructure expenditure tax credit. We see this as a mechanism to spur reinvestment into the industry by in-state refiners with a reasonable cap. If refiners make significant commitments to infrastructure investments, we are going to be responsible for 90% of the cost. Tara mentioned earlier that we've spent over $150 million on our ultra-low sulfur diesel facility. I would like to think that we would have the ability or the possibility of investing as much as it would take to qualify for the full $5 million in credits. But realistically, I don't think that that would be the case.
As you know, ASRC has deep roots in Alaska, and by the nature of our mission and our structure, we will continue to be an economic driver in this state and a strong advocate for fair and meaningful business development policy. As stated earlier, we have grown from very humble beginnings into Alaska's largest locally owned company and an employer of choice for thousands of Alaskans. We make disciplined business decisions focused on our mission. The investments we have made were based on Alaska's future potential, not because they qualified for state subsidies, tax credits, or financing. Rather, they were grounded in ASRC's commitment to this state and its residents. While we will continue to operate in Alaska with the long term on the horizon, uncertainties surrounding the continued viability of refining in Alaska makes us question whether we should employ our assets elsewhere. The stark economic realities that face the Alaska refining industry have required ASRC to suspend major new capital investments in refining and fuel distribution. ASRC has been compelled to put on hold a significant multi-million dollar capital project that is necessary for the long-term health of both of our refineries. This particular project would have benefited Alaskans in South Central and the interior, as well as organizations like the Alaska Railroad. We fully support the governor's proposal because it remedies one of the outstanding threats to in-state refiners. Please know that neither PetroStar nor ASRC are looking for an exit strategy. We are seeking the stability that is necessary to justify long-term investment and maintain a viable refining industry in Alaska. Thank you. Kuyanakpuk.
Thank you. Representative Osterman and then Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My question deals with how PetroStar is organized, I guess. I'm assuming that PetroStar is a when you do your taxes, you do it for your whole business and your corporate taxes that are.
I think Golden Valley Electric's going to bring donuts, right? Please.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it, so.
It still happened, though.
Please.
My question, I guess I'm trying to get to the $15 million of a cap on tax credits and. Are you willing to share what your tax liability is so that we can get a feel for what the $15 million does?
Co-Chair Osterman, I'd prefer not to share that number. I can tell you it would have been minuscule in 2013. And I can also share with you that PetroStar this year would not have any tax liability year to date.
you don't have a tax liability? I didn't follow that last statement.
To have a tax liability, you would have had to have generated a profit in that time frame.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chairman. Then in the conversation that I had a little while ago with the commissioner in reference to the unused tax liabilities, the carry forward or carry back or 5 years, and then the payment structure that would be in the bill to give you cash payment if you had enough tax to not fulfill the credit. So if we remove those out of this bill, would that affect your business plans, or what effect would have here?
So if, Co-Chair Osterman, if you removed, can you just clarify for me which sections you're
referencing? Sure, I'm on page 3 of the amendment,
okay.
Page 3 of the amendment on line 14, and any unused tax credits talks about carry forwards for the 5 years tax, if that's removed. And then you go down to line 19, and it says a person entitled to a tax credit refund for payment amount of unused portion. If we remove those out of the bill, what effect would that have as far as you guys are concerned?
Well, speaking from Arctic Slope Regional Corporation's ownership interest in PetroStar, this would have a significant impact on PetroStar's viability, and especially if you're looking at Section D, starting on line 19, it would have an impact.
If you don't have a tax liability, then it's hard to get a tax credit unless you can carry it forward. Is that correct?
As I understand the language in this bill, this amendment, if you qualify for a tax credit under this section and your tax liability is zero, you're eligible for a refund.
Yeah, you're eligible for us to pay you to do business in Alaska. Because you don't have a liability, but money's going to come out of somebody's pocket to pay you to do business, to help you run your operations, to make you profitable. And so, again, as I told you when I walked in the door, I'm having a problem because I'm having a problem with creating a profit for you out of a non-tax situation and we're giving you money that makes your bottom line. So. And I'm having a hard time with that. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would go back to ASRC and its ownership stake in PetroStar. We certainly wouldn't be here today having and engaging in this discussion if we did not feel that there are issues inside or with the refining industry and the viability of not just PetroStar, but for refiners in Alaska as a whole. And the provisions that are contained in this current bill certainly, I wouldn't say, would create a windfall for our organizations. In fact, what it would do is help us stabilize the industry so that we can continue to look at ways to grow the business. And again, as we know, there is a 5-year sunset date, and that during that time frame, I'm hopeful that we will position ourselves as ASRC and with PetroStar, or position PetroStar to continue to grow in this state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thompson and then Guttenberg.
Guerra. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
We still have Tesoro, too.
Mr. Chapados, out of curiosity, the railroad is a declining business. What is PetroStar's part, and what do you foresee as a possibility to increase the business of the railroad in the state through PetroStar?
Through the Chair, Representative Thompson, I can tell you that we have been in extensive discussions with the Alaska Railroad on plans to install rail loading and offloading facilities to move our product to market more efficiently and in larger volumes to address the fact that there's a finite amount of trucking capacity within the state of Alaska and allow us to again, move more of our product to market more efficiently. I can tell you, too, that those discussions, the details of them are covered by a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't go into to depth. But I can tell you, though, that we were both organizations were very excited about the possibilities and the potential, and we saw it as a path forward to taking the next step with PetroStar.
Thank you.
We sort of have a non-disclosure agreement with the railroad, too. They don't tell us anything. other than they need $20 million this year and about $70, $80 million over the next few years, and they can't sell any land, and they can't do any fees, and they can't tell us anything other than that. So you guys are actually a breath of fresh air comparatively. But Representative Guttenberg and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your slide number 9, the bottom bullet, you're talking about the methodology on the Quality Bank and how it's a profit center for royalty owners and shippers, but it's a heavy burden on you. Can you explain that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, is your question, what is the Quality Bank?
No, I understand what a Quality Bank is, but how it's working, that it's such a detriment to your business practices and how it's a profit center for the industry.
The Quality Bank, as I noted in our testimony, is right now the product of what we feel is a flawed judge's decision at the FERC level. We're feeling the impact of that flawed decision more and more here of late. In fact, I can tell you that there were instances in last month when the combined cost of raw material, ANS crude oil, plus the Quality Bank actually exceeded the sale value for jet fuel we were delivering to the Anchorage market. That should give you some sense of just how large a bite out of our potential margin on fuel sales is going to the Quality Bank. The Quality Bank is ostensibly used to compensate shippers for the degradation that their oil undergoes when TAPS refiners like PetroStar and Flint Hills re-inject oil back into the pipeline. It also adjusts for the varying qualities of crude oils on the North Slope. To give you some sense of how far out of balance we perceive it being currently, last year, 2013, was PetroStar's worst year in terms of profit from ongoing operations. We paid $72 million into the Quality Bank last year, and the four major recipients of that Quality Bank payment was the three major oil producers and the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
Representative Garrett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You certainly don't have to share your finances with us, but you're also asking for money, which puts us in a conundrum. Let me just understand a few things. Did I understand you that last year was your worst year for profits and this year you're on track for a loss? Is that correct?
That's through the chair. Representative Guerra, that's correct.
Okay. And so Representative Osterman pointed out the provision for under the $15 million credit, which it seems you don't actually have to do anything. You just get the $15 million credit, that you get it even if you have no tax liability. That was page 3. And then I've noticed on the $5 million credit, page 5, line 18 through 20, it seems that if you make no profit, you still get to claim the $5 million credit if you made enough investments. That's the wrong. It's page 5, line 2 through 4. It's the same provision. You get the credit even if you make no profit. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's my understanding.
So, through the chair, we had a school debate that many of us divided across on, but what we all recognized was we're in fiscal tough times right now. And let me just ask you this. Let's say your loss next year is $2 million, though it seems like you've made profits every year until this year seems bad for you, really bad. But let's say your loss is $2 million, and we give you $18 million, and we give you $20 million. The state's given you an $18 million profit, $15 million of which you didn't have to do anything for, and $5 million of which we're just reimbursing you for what are called qualified expenditures, which don't require efficiency upgrades. They just require expenditures on capital, essentially. Why is that? I mean, why should we not have a more closely tailored bill than this?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, as Commissioner Balash explained, this was the response of the governor's office to the challenges that we presented to him in terms of what in-state refining was facing. To your point regarding the $18 million that would be essentially profit for PetroStar at that point, to have achieved that level of tax credit, PetroStar and Arctic Slope would have had to invest $50 million in a single year to get that full benefit. I think that would be representative of the level of commitment we've had in prior years and that we would like to have in the coming years. We see this as a mechanism in total that would allow our industry to weather the storm that we're going through right now and come out the other side as a viable operation and continue to serve this Alaska state market.
Through the chair.
Jim Gare.
I'm uncomfortable, especially with Section 3, which, unless I'm misreading it, you don't have to do anything to just get the $15 million credit. Is there something that the state could do to help you avoid your quality bank penalties? Is there some infrastructure upgrade we could help you with that would be more narrowly tailored so the state doesn't spend as much money as this bill or this amendment would require? Is there something we could do to help you with your quality bank problems? That seems to be a big problem that you're facing that's eating into your profits.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the quality bank is largely a federal issue. Again, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is the one that ultimately decides the methodology itself. The RCA at one time did disagree with the FERC ruling, but that was quite a few years ago, more than 20 years ago, in fact. Of late, the RCA has simply concurred with FERC's decision. In that way, or in, for that reason, we don't see that there's a great deal that the state can do in terms of compensating or adjusting for the increased penalties that PetroStar is having to pay. That said, however, we have requested of the administration that we work together with the other parties to the quality bank proceeding that is ongoing right now to see if we can't strike a settlement, one that would forestall additional litigation going forward, but also make the quality bank more reasonable. To be very clear, we are not saying the quality bank should be zero. We appreciate the fact that we are having an impact on the quality of the crude oil as it travels down the pipeline, but we don't believe that it is equitable that in a year when PetroStar makes very little profit, we are at the same time are paying $72 million into the quality bank.
Thank you. Representative Management, and this will go to the next presenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I get the picture about how important this refinery is, what PetroStar's activity is to the state. And what I'd like to do is maybe ask you directly if you could talk about the five-year transition plan, because in the business world, sometimes 5 years is hardly even sort of a life cycle of transitioning from one stage to another stage. And I can speak with some experience from this because I've been the chairman of our village corporation for many years, and we've had to shut down couple of our subsidiary companies, and it was painful, and you sever business relationships, and you make shareholders angry, and all of the above and so forth. But the implications of this is larger statewide. But I want to hear from you, because we have been hearing some concern about the benefits that this bill would provide. But talk a little bit about in that five-year span where you think things can be, and obviously you'd have to come back to get this reauthorized were this to continue after 5 years. But you must have some kind of phased in a staged process between now and that 5 years to hopefully, you know, improve the economics if there are any efficiencies that you can glom onto. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, thank you for that question. This bill is a step in the right direction for us, and ASRC as an organization has a very disciplined approach to how we deploy our assets. We have a congressional mandate to provide benefits back to our shareholders, and that's through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And so as we look at what fits our business portfolio, we have to look at our business lines and our investment opportunities dispassionately and make the most prudent business decisions, because it is our fiduciary responsibility to manage those assets appropriately on behalf of our shareholders. Having said all of that, with a with provisions like this, over the next 5 years, we can, in fact, work to stabilize PetroStar so that we can look at reinvesting our dollars into the organization so that it will continue to grow as an in-state refiner.
So, Edwin, just to follow and to keep the conversation going in the direction I think we wanted to go, the five-year proposal is from the governor, is that correct?
Yes.
And you originally wanted a longer period in the ideal scenario?
Through the chair, that would be correct.
Okay, so that satisfies my question about that being at least one sideboard in the bill.
And through the chair, if I might, Representative Edgeman, the refining industry is hugely capital intensive, and investment decisions are not made on a five-year time frame. Typically, we're looking out 10, 20, or longer into the future when we're talking about getting a return on our investment. We mentioned earlier the ultra-low sulfur diesel investment. I can tell you that that's not something that pays off in a very short period of time. But at the same time, we made the commitment to this market to produce that product. We saw it a value to have an in-state, a second in-state source of ultra-low sulfur diesel. To your point of do we have a plan, we have projects in the queue. We have, again, at least one rail transportation project that we would very much like to pursue. This will certainly factor into the decision that Arctic Slope ultimately makes whether or not that is an investment they wish to make. And Representative Gara and yourself both asked about efficiency, and that is something that is very near and dear to our heart at PetroStar. I believe that is one of the reasons why you're talking to us today as a refiner that's staying in business rather than Flint Hills, which is announcing its closure. Over the years, we have made extensive efforts to improve the efficiency of our plant, to make them both as fuel and electricity efficient as possible. We saw that as the one way that we could compete with much larger competitors and still remain viable. It has been a recipe for success for us in terms of the high energy costs that we now all experience, including our refineries. We use crude oil as fuel at our plants, so there is every incentive for us to maximize the efficiency of the plant and minimize at the same time the volume of energy that we have to consume to process a barrel of oil.
Thank you. We're going to do the best we can. I want to thank you for your presentation, and we see if we can at least get 5 minutes of presentation in for Mr. Tungaro. With our apologies that it's so truncated today. Thank you, Ms. Sweeney and Mr. Chapados.
Thank you very much. And,
welcome, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Stoltz, Chairman Osterman, rest of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll be brief. As you know, we testified in support of this bill last time it was in your on your floor. So it's changed a bit.
It's potentially changing. We have a pending amendment, so we'll see.
Right.
That seems to be the outlook.
Well, folks, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity. My name is James Tangaro. I'm the Vice President of the Kenai Refinery for Tesoro. Our refinery got its start back in 1969 on Alaska's original oil boom. When Swanson River was discovered and oil in the Cook Inlet, that's the oil we still process today, along with some North Slope and oil from other sources. The refinery currently can process 72,000 barrels per day, and we employ about 210 people there, about 30 full-time contractors. And if you include our marketing folks, we have about 550 employees in the state. Again, the most important part of this whole thing for us is the royalty oil contract. For Tesoro, this contract extension provides a stable supply of ANS crude while giving us the volumetric flexibility to accommodate seasonal fluctuations in our run rates. The availability, flexibility, and stability that the contract extension offers will have a positive effect on Tesoro's ability to maintain our operations at Kenai. As to the amendments being offered tonight, we appreciate the governor's acknowledgement that Alaska continues to be a challenging location for the refining industry, and that refining jobs are critical to the communities in which Alaskan refineries operate. Maintaining those refineries has many statewide benefits. However, Alaska is refining is a very complicated business, and as you guys have asked questions, when you decide to contemplate this bill, it's important for you to maintain a level playing field for all the participants in the refining business in Alaska. Again, most of our testimony that we wanted to present is on record the last time that the bill was on the floor, so we'll leave it at that unless there's questions for me.
We've got a lot of them, but I don't want to have them in the box at this time.
Well, why don't you go ahead and ask if you
want to. That's fine.
Right, sure. Okay. Well, are you going to be available either in person or by teleconference again?
I will be, sure.
Okay. Chairman. My apologies. Best intentions on schedule. And I have an overly inquisitive committee here.
You did a good job, Chairman. Thank right. you.
So with that, I want to thank you for your patience and limiting your testimony to confine with the minutes we had remaining and tailored to that. And we will look forward to hearing from you again with more detail and have an opportunity for you to elaborate on your concerns regarding level playing field and some of the things you just touched upon briefly. And with that, think of your questions for Mr. Tangaro.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. With that, I guess we have somewhere else to go, so we will stand in adjournment. We'll be back again 8:30 tomorrow morning.